Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, John Karsibayev.
I'm Lisa Lutoff-Perlo. I am president and CEO of Celebrity Cruises.
Lisa, thanks so much for making time to join us on the Ivy Podcast. Before we dive in and talk about all of the great things that you're leading and building at Celebrity Cruise Lines, I want to spend a couple of minutes talking a little bit about your background. What have you done prior to this? So if you don't mind, just give us a thumbnail version of your career to date.
Sure. I started 36 years ago in this company. And my first position was a district sales manager, going door to door in New England, where I'm from, and also Eastern Canada was part of my territory, calling on travel partners to promote Royal Caribbean Cruises at the time. And that's where it all began. And I spent 17 years in sales, various positions. And then I moved over to marketing in 2001. I was there for a little over 4 years. Then I moved over to Celebrity and operations, hotel operations in 2005. I stayed there until 2012. And then I moved back to Royal Caribbean. I always say I'm schizophrenic. I keep going back and forth. And some days I don't know which brand I'm on. But I spent 2 years as executive vice president of operations, and it was the first time I was responsible for not only hotel, but the marine organization. And then in late 2014, I took on the role of president and CEO of Celebrity Cruises. So I've had a very long, as I said, 36-year long career, and it was a very windy road. And I also run the global marine organization as well as the Celebrity brand. So so it's been a great and varied career.
Wow, that's super exciting. What a journey. Can you give us a little bit of a color relationship between Royal and Celebrity Cruises, if there is any?
Yes. Well, we're in the same company, the Royal Caribbean Group. There are three main brands within the Royal Caribbean Group: Royal Caribbean International, the brand, Celebrity Cruises, the brand, and then Silver Seas. So there are three brands within that corporate portfolio. And so as I've navigated my way through the career, I've gone back and forth between the two largest brands a couple of times.
Well, that's exciting. And I'm pretty sure you've seen not only the company, but the industry go through all different iterations, different cycles, and all kinds of different trends. So I can't help but ask, what are some of the trends that are you mostly excited about these days, whether that's, you know, us going through the pandemic or coming out of that? Just share with us, what are you researching? What's kind of the next big thing on Lisa's plate?
Yeah, so it's been crazy, that's for sure, John. So if I go back pre-pandemic, I think one of the things that has always been most exciting, you know, I know that there are a lot of people that are listening that would never imagine themselves in a company for 36 years, right? But I think one of the things that's really exciting about our company in particular and our industry in general is that it's a growth industry. So there's so much going on, and we continue to build ships. And the great thing about our company is we spend a tremendous amount of time on innovation. How are we different, better? What is our consumer proposition? And then how do we just continue to elevate and elevate that? And that goes not only for our experience, but also in terms of being above and beyond compliance and everything that we do. So that's always been exciting and has really kept me interested and motivated and, you know, moving forward in the company. And then, of course, as we all know, 18 months ago, we were hit with this pandemic, and I never thought in my 36-year career we would be completely shut down, you know, as an industry for so long. It was devastating. Of course, it's been devastating for our company. It's been devastating for our financial health as we've borrowed billions to get ourselves through this. It was devastating for our guests, our crew, our employees, everybody. And it's been devastating for the world. So, you know, we're not alone, but I do believe our industry was disproportionately hit pretty hard and pretty long from this. But now we're coming out of it. And that's exciting. You know, you think about this for 18 months. Every day I wake up, I try to think about the silver lining in the COVID-19 cloud. And coming out of this has given us an opportunity. And while we were taking our pause, it's given us an opportunity to refocus on, you know, how we want to see our brand for the future, what we want to be doing differently. And now getting these ships back into service and bringing our crew back to work has just been really wonderful. And, you know, it's slow and steady. And pretty soon, I think within the first 4 months of 2022, all of the Celebrity ships will be back in service.
So to prepare your organization to go through all these different cycles and iterations, a lot of them unpredictable and you can only plan so much, I would imagine that innovation is also at the core of the strategy to continuously innovate, whether that's, you know, some transformational initiative or a small process improvement internally. I want to get your perspective on what are the strategies and maybe practical recommendations that you've implemented at the company that really helps you build and foster that culture of innovation.
Well, you know, we really took two tracks, I think, as we were preparing and planning to come back into service after being out so long. One was, you know, what do we want to do and how do we want Celebrity to be known when we come out of this? And are there different things we would like to do? Are there different segments of the market we would like to go after? Are there different experiences we'd like to build on board? And oh, by the way, we also introduced a ship during the pandemic. We took delivery of one of our ships, and we also are building another ship that's scheduled to be delivered in April, Celebrity Beyond. So, you know, we have still been quite busy innovating and thinking about our future and our brand and who is our customer going to be and how long is it going to take us to get back to financial health. And so that's, you know, that's been really invigorating for all of us. And then, of course, we have to think about our healthy protocols and what we're going to do to keep our guests safe and just make sure that some of the things that we have to do in the short term that we make sure we focus on. And some of those things are going to continue into the long term because, you know, that's just the way we're going to be doing business in the future. And those could be sanitation protocols, enhanced medical facilities, HVAC systems that are, you know, on some ships have had to be changed, but on most ships we're just fine. So some of those things will be with us forever, I think. You know, I think that will be one of the outcomes of the pandemic. But we say in our industry right now, with our vaccination rates and all the things that we're doing, you know, being on a cruise is safer than being on Main Street, especially right now with this variant going on.
Right. And to pull the thread a little bit more on preparing your organization for the next period, in terms of. And I understand maybe the cruises specifically is a little bit of a different setup, but for the office workers and the office locations, and I talk to a lot of executives in different industries, and it's always an interesting topic, especially these days. How do you prepare your organization for what's coming without having any type of intel, any type of information to go off of, whether that's a hybrid model or continue working remotely? How do you think about that? What are the strategies that really kind of help you frame your strategy from that perspective?
Well, you know, we've thought a lot about it and we've made different decisions along the way. You know, we make a decision and then we change the decision because everything is changing. It's always evolving. It's, you know, you think you're in a good place and then all of a sudden you're not in a good place like right now with this variant. And so the first, we first thought we would start going back to the office in June. And then we postponed that until August. And now with the Delta variant, we've postponed it again to the middle of October. And so, you know, our main campus of corporate offices is here in South Florida. It's at the Port of Miami. And starting the week of October 19th, right now, that is when different groups will start going back to the corporate office. We are not looking at a hybrid model. I know a lot of companies are. I know a lot of employees ask us. We've all been working remotely for 18 months, and a lot of people are wondering, you know, why are we not going to a hybrid model? And I think, you know, I think one of the things that I've realized during this time is, yes, we've been effective. We've been doing everything we need to do. We're making the decisions we need to make. But I happen to have my fully vaccinated leadership team here at my home for dinner last night. It's the first time we were all together in 17 months in one room at one time. And as I was thinking about that, and I was thinking during the day about seeing them, I realized how terrible that is. And so I think as we've thought through what we believe is the best, you know, solution for us, for the innovation, for the creativity, for building camaraderie, for, you know, just getting back to business the way it should be done, we're all going back to the office. And we are offering our employees an opportunity 1 week this year to work virtually from the location of their choice, and then 2 weeks next year. So it's sort of a, we know, you know, in some cases you like to be working virtually, so you can do it for 2 weeks next year and for 1 week this year. And so we'll see how that goes. And then we are going to a model where, though, either you're all back in the office or you're all working remotely. And many of our call centers throughout the country have gone to the work from home model. And that will continue. So it's, you know, it's varied. And again, it changes every day. So that's my answer today, John.
Right. And that's very interesting. And you've mentioned something, you know, your leadership team and just overall as an executive, I would imagine that surrounding yourself with the best of the best is at, you know, top of your mind 24/7, whether you're actively recruiting or not.
Sure.
Share some strategies with us when it comes to talent acquisition. What helps you attract the top talent to your teams, especially in this very hot candidate-driven market with so much opportunity for everyone on a global scale? How do you succeed in that space?
It's been very interesting because you're right, it's a hot market. You know, there's, as we were thinking about this pandemic and coming out of it, we actually thought quite the opposite, that there wouldn't be a hot job market for people, but that's proven to be incorrect. And, you know, I think there's a couple things. There's an attraction and retention strategy, right? And I think the thing that I look for most in both, not only bringing people to my team, but also keeping people on the team, is culture. And, you know, I'm fortunate that I'm in a position where by the time I speak to a candidate, even a candidate on my leadership team, they have been very well vetted. They've been very well vetted through our recruitment team or a search firm, depending on who we use. And they're also very well vetted by the rest of the leadership team, because there's a lot of, you know, in my situation, the team interviews whatever potential team member is coming onto the team before I do. I always feel like that team needs to know who they're talking to. They need to know who the candidates are, and they need to be able to say to me, hand on heart, I really would love working with this person, and I think they'd be a really great fit. And then by the time we cull it down to maybe the top two or three and those people come to me, it's really all about culture. Do I believe, because I'm assuming they're a very strong candidate, we do have conversations about their backgrounds and all the great things that they've done. But for me, it's mostly about, do I think this person will really be a great cultural fit, a good member of the team, someone the team can depend on, someone that will be really collaborative, and someone who will help elevate the brand, elevate the team, and then elevate their own team? You know, are they really concerned about the success of the people that they will work with every day as well? And so as I, you know, as you think about talent, yeah, there are a lot of people out there, certainly, but I have found in my career and through my many years of recruiting people that the really great ones are few and far between.
Right, absolutely. And we could probably spend the rest of the podcast talking about this because it's such an interesting space. But to take that a little bit further, so as you go through, you know, you're able to attract the top talent, and, you know, for in the current market conditions, the war on retention that we've all been hearing about, it's real that, you know, with so many companies, you know, providing the opportunities to, you know, employees virtually on global scale, how do you think about building that culture of retention where the, you know, your top performers are recognized, they're challenged, and they have the opportunity for growth?
Well, you know, it's funny because as we've been looking for talent throughout this time, one of the things that I was really worried about is, would people want to come to this industry? And you know, even with our agencies that we've hired, when we were putting out the RFP for our PR agency and our, I think at the end of last year, maybe last fall, I was thinking, is anybody even going to want to pitch this business? Because it's like, oh gosh, the cruise industry, you know, with all of the crazy negative press that was going on and the fact that we were shut down. But one of the things that I think is really important is I've spent a lot of time really thinking about the culture of celebrity and who we are, what we stand for, and how we want to put ourselves out in the universe, not only in how we deliver these amazing award-winning vacations with these, you know, spectacular ships that, you know, there's really no competition for. But I feel like people care about what you care about more than what you do. And so just like as we think about our guests and we want to attract guests to our brand who care about the same things we do, it's the same thing with recruitment and retention. And when I ask people, you know, why they want to come and work for celebrity, every single time I get the same answer. It's because of your culture and the things you stand for. And what I realize is that it's not always money. It is recognition, to your point and your question. You know, saying thank you, recognizing people, especially over these last 18 months, our teams, what they have gone through and what they have done to not only shut us down, but then get us started again, to continue to sell our cruises and our brands so that when we come out of this, we would get back to financial health as soon as possible. What they've done, you know, they've been busier when we've been out of business than they were even when we were in business. And so and they're remote, so you don't get to see them and look across the table and look them in the eye or hug them or, you know, or have a dinner with them and thank them. It's this whole thing has taught me so much about leadership and what it takes to make people feel valued and make people want to stay. Because I also believe that this whole remote thing, which is another, I think, reason why I'm so in favor of just getting back to the office, the loyalty that people feel has waned as you're just sitting in front of these computer screens now. You know, they don't feel like, oh, I'm going to miss the people I'm in the office with every day, because they're not going to. You know, they're sitting here in their little offices all by themselves. And I think their psyche has really changed over this last 18 months. And I believe now retention is going to be harder than it's ever been.
Right. Absolutely. And when it comes to there's space that's very fascinating to me that I would like to talk to you about is it's very challenging, and I'm yet to see anyone to be really good at that. And I'm talking about interviewing. When it comes to interviewing, it's from past experience and everything that I've observed, a lot of the interviews are based on that personal past experience. And it seems to be very flawed, because at the end of the day, you're not then focusing on what is the strength that's missing on our team versus is there a weakness that I can tolerate in that particular candidate that I'm interviewing? So those are some of the trends that's kind of I've been observing, at least from my personal experience. But curious to get your take. How do you think about interviews? How do you approach them? Because, you know, you being the CEO and president, the candidates go through multiple iterations, probably assessments. And when they get to you, it's a more of a conversation, I would imagine. Give us an example of some of the questions perhaps that you ask, but more importantly, what do you look for in the responses when you hear?
Yeah, it is a conversation. I really try to approach every interview as a conversation. You know, I guess I look for different things. I look for different signals, I guess. And it's almost hard to put into words. To your point, it's hard to get that great answer when you ask that question. It also varies on the position and the individual, and sort of what gap you're trying to fill, right? And then you have to think of the dynamics of the rest of the team. And you have to think about, all right, I look at my team in totality, and I think, where is the gap on my team? And how do I think this person will fit in with all those other personalities? Because I always say, to your point when you were asking me that question, I always think you try to find you have these imperfect human beings that you hope will do an almost perfect job, right? So you know that no matter who you talk to, you're not going to get everything that you probably in your mind think about for this position. These are the top five things. You're always going to have to say, all right, well, I got three or I got four. Probably don't want to go less than that, because then you just trust your instinct and walk away. And, you know, I've always found that you're better to walk away if you haven't found the person that you feel is the best fit with all of those variables. And just keep trying, because it's too hard to find great people to fill these positions. It's even harder when you bring someone in that you probably knew wasn't going to be the right fit to begin with. And then you have to start over again. And that's expensive, not only from a financial perspective, but it's expensive from your business and your team perspective. So these decisions are so, so, so important. And so as I have my conversations, I think, you know, the way people answer, I think, first and foremost, is this a really good human being sitting across from me? Am I going to love coming to work every day with this person? Because it's not easy. It's really hard. What we do is really hard in good times, and what we do is even harder in these tough times. And are they going to be good partners? Not only for me, can I depend on them? Do they have a good energy about them, but also for their colleagues? Are they, you know, going to share the spotlight or hog the spotlight? For their team, are they going to be a servant leader or are they a top-down leader? And you can get those, you know, you can get those answers without asking those direct questions, because anybody that you ask that direct question, of course, they're going to give you the answer that, you know, that they know you're looking for. But, you know, what I find in interviewing people is you have to ask them questions that have nothing to do with what you're really trying to find out about them. And I've found out things about people when I've asked a certain question, and when I'm done with the interview, it was this one thing they said in this one part of the conversation that we were having that I just knew was they were just not going to fit in, or they weren't going to be a good pick, or they weren't even going to be a good pick for me. Because I, you know, the other thing I think an interviewer has to really understand is themselves, and sort of what, you know, what type of person they're going to be able to work with and feel comfortable working with. And so, I really think long and hard, but every question I ask is, it's not prescribed. It's really on a case by case basis. And a lot of it has to do with feedback I've gotten from other people who have interviewed them along the way, where I probe for certain things, if they've called out something that they weren't sure about.
Yeah, and it's a muscle that I'm pretty sure you can develop through all these years that you've been at different levels at your organization and probably have contact and, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of interviews at all different levels, and to be able to develop that stamina, develop that, you know, assessment skills. I think that's very unique. That's very interesting space. When it comes to more specifically around the skills that are extremely challenging to find in this current market conditions, when we talk about whether that's technical domain expertise or soft skill, what have you observed in the past couple of years that is extremely challenging to find, especially when you interview folks remotely? I would imagine that also adds another layer of complexity to be able to make that determination. Just talk to us a little bit from that perspective. What have you seen in the candidates? What are some of the skills that you find hard to find? And the reason I ask that question is because there's two segments of our audience on the Avi podcast, the executives themselves, but also there's early stage career professionals that are just entering the workforce. And hearing your experience, right, you know, growing through the ranks within the organization through so many years, it's a completely different perspective. So what are some of the recommendations that you can provide from that standpoint? I realize it's a loaded question and it's all different directions.
Well, you know, here's the thing. I'll use the recent search, my most recent search that I just did for our chief marketing officer. And, you know, I think that's a really good example of the question that you just asked me, because there, you know, when you think about what a chief marketing officer was good at 10 years ago, and you think about what does a chief marketing officer need to be good at now, you know, it's a much more complicated job. It's a very commercial job. It's a very digital job. And you know, when you're looking for, and it's a very creative job. So that's a hard combination. You've got a lot of left brain, right brain things going on there. You've got different skill sets that people can dial up and dial down on any given day. And that's a really good example of, you know, what do they maybe not have as much of that you wish they did, but they have a lot of something else that you're glad they do. And so when you think about an ideal candidate, you know, and you have a pie chart of skill set that you're looking at that's most important, and you have to weight everything. And so I happen to be very fortunate that I found this candidate that had this almost perfect blend of commerce, digital, and creative experience, along with all the other things like loyalty and media buying and different things like that are important. But what I would tell, what I would tell people starting out is the same thing that I would have told myself now that I'm where I am versus where I was when I first started out, is that all the experience that you will gain by moving around and doing different things are going to ultimately make you significantly more valuable as an executive than if you pick one stream and one path and stick to it. And so it's really interesting to me because I have a lot of these discussions with young people in our company who are looking to do different things and move ahead and advance their careers, and they're doing a certain thing. And my advice to them is take a different path, do something else, develop a different muscle, like you just said. And it's so invaluable in how people view you the next time a promotion or an opportunity comes up. But that's such a hard concept to get across. And no matter, even though I've done it and ended up as the president and CEO, you know, in this position I never dreamed I would have 36 years ago. It wasn't even an aspiration of mine. Shame on me. But it's only because I took that long and windy road that I ended up here. And even though I use myself as this primary example of this is what can happen if these are the things that you'll do, it just, you know, for some reason, people have this linear path that they want to take. But what you need to understand is candidates need to be much more multidimensional now than they ever have been. And that's, I think, where we all need to really understand that and embrace different things and different opportunities as they come along, even if it's not something you think you're going to be good at or you ever really thought you wanted to do. And I've had a lot of those examples throughout my own career.
Well, that's great. I love that recommendation. It's very powerful and straight, you know, very on point, especially with the current market conditions, with everything that's going on in the world and the workforce. I think that's very relevant. So definitely thank you for sharing that. And we've been hearing the kind of the overall concept of future of work being, you know, on the rise, and especially in the last couple of years, you know, how people communicate, how they collaborate, how they interact with each other. What are your thoughts overall on future of work? Because you deal with all different levels and types of workers in cruise lines that are, you know, working on the ships and off the ships. How do you prepare for that? What are your just overall thoughts on the kind of that powerful concept of future of work, the gig work concept that's been growing as well, the freelance and just being able to work as, you know, as a digital nomad, so to say, with all the opportunities? Just share some thoughts around that perspective.
Well, you know, I think that I think it's just another opportunity for people who want to look at work a different way. I really do. I mean, I think about even when we're looking for someone and, you know, you've got your nomads out there doing certain things that make themselves available at certain times. I think for an employer, it's a good thing because it can ebb and flow. You know, you have things that you really need to get done and you need some expertise, and those things might not be forever. And then you don't, you know, as an employer, you can you know, bring people in and bring people out. You know, you look at even our digital space, which is so much of that. So much of what we do in the digital place space are people coming and people going in the future of work and making themselves available for certain projects and then moving on somewhere else and doing something else. And different project, different company, different town. And that's all real. And I think it's probably becoming even more real because you can do it even more so. Post-pandemic, we've all realized you can even do a lot of this remotely. So I do think that there's really, you know, that's going to grow. And I think it's going to be around forever. But it's not for everybody because, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty around that. And you know, you always need to hope that there's an opportunity for you so that you can, you know, make whatever living it is that you want to live. And so, you know, so that takes a certain type of person, but what's the good news is for that type of person, opportunities do exist and probably very good ones. In terms of the whole collaboration and people working together, you know, the ships are different, right? They are, you know, there's crew, they all have their different positions and they all do different things. And it's a very operational and functional job. It's not so much like our corporate offices where we're thinking about the future of the brand or the future of the company or future new builds. But, you know, you think about this collaboration space and even collaboration in general. And I don't think that's going away. I think it's a little more complicated right now because, you know, people are kind of staying away from each other for the most part and, you know, masks and are you vaccinated and are you not vaccinated? But that's why those questions are so important for companies because in the absence of having the most pristine environment we can in the situation that we're all in, that suffers. The collaboration suffers, people's willingness to be collaborative and be in spaces with other people. People, you know, we were building a new office building just before we shut down and it was all open, no dividers between people. And now we're looking at that and saying, okay, that would be horrifying for everybody. And so, you know, you have to figure out just how to accomplish both because I have everything that our industry does and I don't think it's different than others, is in a highly collaborative, brainstorming, idea debating environment that I think is really, really critical and also has a tendency to get lost when you're just on Zoom. It's different. You're distracted, you know, you see people walking away, doing different things. But when you're in a room and you're all going at it, that's where the magic happens. And I believe that's going to be here forever. And I believe that is where the best outcomes for any company or any idea happen. And, you know, I'm involved. I'm on an advisory board for an innovation space at Nova. And this entire building is built on the premise of innovation and having a spot where people and companies and startups can go in and innovate in a highly creative environment. And it's really gaining a tremendous amount of recognition and traction all over the country because it's unique. And what it shows is that this is a really important way to work for the future and going forward. Even coming out of this pandemic, it's just proven to be just a really successful and popular concept.
A lot of great thoughts, and definitely thank you for sharing that. You've mentioned Nova as well, and I'm involved with that initiative myself.
As one of the
mentors and advisors to the startups and the investors as well.
There
and
you
definitely,
go.
It's a huge initiative. It's unbelievable the space that they're building.
Yes.
Which definitely going to contribute to, especially the South Florida ecosystem of the innovation, the startups and the investments flowing in. So that's very exciting. I'm glad you actually mentioned that. So for you to stay ahead of the curve and keep yourself educated and abreast of everything that's going on in your industry or maybe even outside of that, curious to hear a little bit about your content diet. What are the different sources that you consume on a daily basis to keep yourself educated?
Well, certainly industry things are very much on my list, focusing not only on the cruise industry, but the hospitality industry. You know, great books by great leaders. And I also have someone on my team who shares, she's amazing. And she shares a lot of content and books just on, you know, as we think, she heads up our strategy. And so we're often collaborating and using ideas from books of other great leaders who have, whether it's Estee Lauder or Disney or other great companies that have really had to continue to transform themselves and remain relevant. And I also try to read a lot about and from women who have, you know, maybe experienced the same things that I've experienced or some of the other women that I work with. There's a great book by Reshma Soojani, the past president and CEO of Girls Who Code, called Brave Not Perfect. And always trying to not only keep myself ahead of the curve in terms of what's going on in the industry and what consumers are looking for, but also what other great leaders have done is they've transformed their brands and thought about things that were most important for the future, but also just sort of thinking about my own self-development and also how I can help other people. You know, gender equality has been a big thing of mine, but it's not just gender. It's equality and diversity for everyone and just how to just continue on that journey in a really positive way.
Well, you definitely beat me to the punch with the last question that I always ask about the book recommendations. But is there one book that you always recommend to others, and why is that?
Well, I do like Brave Not Perfect. And I realize that, you know, Reshma wrote that for young girls, you know, to be brave instead of trying to always be perfect, because, you know, that's sort of what many young girls are brought up to believe. I have to be perfect. I have to be beautiful. I have to be this. I have to be that. And her premise is to be brave, because that's more important. And I believe that in general. While her idea was geared toward young girls, I think it's a lesson for all of us. And that's why I think, you know, it takes courage. You know, one of the things I think about as a leader is that you really need a tremendous amount of courage. And some of us in the things that we're doing, we worry about getting it perfect before, you know, we take a risk. And I think that's dangerous. You know, you sacrifice, you know, great for good because you want to be perfect. But if you look at the things that have been great in this world or things that people have accomplished, it's mostly because they were brave and not because they waited for the perfect answer or the perfect solution. They were willing to take a risk. And I think that, I think that that premise would serve us all well, regardless of gender or any other label that you want to put on people. I think it's a great thing to keep in the back of your mind.
I love that recommendation. And for our listeners, we'll make the title and authors available in the show notes. Lisa, I can't thank you enough for this very short and insightful conversation. I personally learned quite a bit. What I love doing with a lot of the guests on Ivy Podcast is do a follow-up recording in about a year, and where we revisit the conversation from last year and basically see if everything we've discussed still makes sense, still pertains. So I'm definitely looking forward to doing that with you as well.
Thanks, John. It was lovely chatting with you today. You take care.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.